From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
For the superstitious, this is Money Talk for Friday the 13th, 2019. Al's Run for Children's Hospital is happening downtown Saturday. And just so you don't forget, the walk to end Alzheimer's is this Sunday at Summerfest Grounds. Country music superstar Vince Gill is at the Riverside Theater this Saturday. And the Brewers, without Christian Yelich, start their last homestand of the season this Monday. Here are a couple of stories that might make you feel you're not as cool and hip as you think you are. Remember the days of vinyl records? Then we moved on to cassettes and CDs? Well, vinyl is back and now outselling CDs. Well, that's not going to make you feel old, but this will. 70% of the music business today is streaming. If you don't know what that is, you should ask your grandkids. Okay, a 400-year-old Buddhist temple in Kyoto, Japan has a priest that can bless you, advise you, even perform your funeral along with all the regular priestly duties. What we need to understand is this ordained priest is a robot. And just how creepy is that? And finally, as if politics isn't confusing enough, voters in California's 36th congressional district will have to choose between the incumbent, Paul Ruiz, and his challenger, Paul Ruiz. Same name, different person. I'm sure that won't trigger a recount. In the studio today, we have Kyle Tedding, Dave Sandstrom, Adam Bailey, Joel Dreesang, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. Pretty good week. NASDAQ up 0.9%, climbing 74 points to close at 81.77. The broader markets, the S&P 500 up 1%, tacking on 28 points to close above 3,000, 3,007. Broader markets up a whopping 21.7% year-to-date with dividends. Nice run. The Dow tacked on 1.6%, adding 421 points. We closed at the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week 27,219, a couple of hundred points below the all-time high for the Dow. So it was a pretty good run. Big news, of course, 10-year Treasury yield shot up from a little over 1.5% to 1.9%. Pretty good run up for bond yields in just five trading days. So we'll see probably a continuation of that. Kind of healthy, though, for the broader markets to see stocks go up and bonds go down, back to the normal equation. Kyle, let's start with a question that I got at this investment seminar. Lady filled out a questionnaire. She said, Bob, if you think we're going to avoid a recession, why are earnings projections so attractive for the next couple of years? And, it reminded me that it's so important to tell investors that, the earnings numbers are guesses. Yeah, all right, fine. There may be educated guesses, but they're guesses. And typically, analysts will look at a company without regard to what the broader economy is up to and make a stab at what they think their earnings are going to be for the next couple of years. So what we've seen this year, I think, is a good example. Beginning of the year, the analysts thought that earnings would be up 5%. You and I were talking just a week ago that earnings were supposed to be up 1.8. And then Joel, you distributed the FactSet information, and now they're saying 1.2 for the year. So pretty significant reductions in the earnings estimates, and the economy is still growing. So you can see even in normal times, the analysts are going to be pretty far off the mark. And as you and I both know, there is really no correlation between earnings and stock prices year to year. I mean, longer term, of course, they're spot on, but year to year, it's a flip of the coin.
Yeah, and Bob, take that earnings number for 2019 back to what those same analysts thought. You look at October 1st of last year, And they were thinking maybe 10 to 11% for the S&P 500 earnings for 2019. So interesting to see how quickly that can shift. And, you know, a lot of it obviously had to do with how good earnings were last year. The year-over-year comparisons are tricky, but a lot of it also had to do with the fact that we hadn't priced in some of the risk from tariffs. We hadn't priced in some of the risk that, you know, a slowdown in the global economy overall might have on these stocks. And so, as you say, when you put together these bottom-up views of each individual stock to come up with a number for what's the S&P 500 going to earn this year, you know, it's influenced by the analysts that have particular opinions about sectors, particular opinions about stocks. Many of them may be cheerleaders for the market. And so it's no wonder that I think sometimes you can get a little bit more rosy outlook than what we ultimately end up with. Let's not forget, though, that, you know, that 10% number, while it may have been pretty significant, that move, you know, down to 1.2 that we've seen now maybe is a little bit bigger than what we typically see. But it isn't unusual to see those moves back down.
You know, I think the market investors tend to look forward for earnings. And even though this year's earnings projections has been walked back from where we started the year, you look ahead into 2020, you know, first quarter revenue is up maybe about 5, earnings up, give or take 8. Second quarter, similar story, but full year 2020, revenue's up about 5% and perhaps earnings up as much as 10%, at least as of, you know, most recent estimates, which are being done in an environment where we still have this trade tension going on.
Well, and Adam, I think we need to remember exactly, you know, as you say, that if we're talking about, you know, maybe 10% for next year, well, yeah, we were talking about that for this year too. And so if we do have to walk that back because these trade tensions escalate, if we do have to walk it back because the slowdown is bigger than what's been baked in, because I don't think they've baked in the full depths of what we could see, certainly what we're likely to see, but perhaps not what we could see. I think that also means that we have to reevaluate the potential outcomes for the market. And I think the good news there is that while stocks have been pretty fairly priced, we're not talking about a market that's highly overpriced. And so there's a little bit of room to walk those earnings back.
Kyle, you and I were talking earlier today about the movement and the 10-year, you know, down to 1.5% a couple of weeks ago, a pretty low number. Pretty surprising to see that, you know, the yield shot up this week. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, you know, I think we often talk about this inverse relationship between the stock market and the bond market, this idea that when one is going up, the other should be going in the opposite direction. It should be moving inversely. And I think encouraging to see this week that as the yield on the 10-year treasury moved back higher, the price of the actual 10-year bonds moved a little bit lower. It coincided with an S&P, a Dow, a NASDAQ that was moving higher as well. And so you see that inverse relationship intact between the price of bonds and the price of stocks. You see you know, maybe some encouraging signs on tariffs, some signs that maybe the U.S. economy is as strong as we thought it was at the very least. And so, you know, you're seeing the market respond to that favorably. You're also seeing the bond market respond the way you should. And so, you know, I think we've been encouraged by the returns we got this year on our bond funds so far because yields had plunged as far as they had, and that provides that tailwind for fixed income. I think if you look at your bond portfolio just this week, you're going to be a little disappointed in what you see. You know, if you're talking about a bond portfolio with a duration of around 4 years, that works out to a decline of maybe 1.4% on your bond portfolio this year based on the move we saw. But remember that you're talking about a full year in which you were probably already up 5, 6, 7% on those intermediate term bonds. And so, you know, I think encouraging that we're seeing that relationship intact, it tells us, I think, that we're on the right track finally about the way we're viewing the world, that maybe we've finally started to come to an equilibrium in terms of where we see things headed. But then again, it also tells us that there's some risk to bonds if things escalate more quickly than we think they could.
Dave, as you know, a couple of weeks ago, Alan Greenspan, former head of the Fed, went on the record saying that, you know, maybe the U.S. could be heading towards negative yields to mirror what's going on in the United States and Japan. And, of course, that caused all sorts of speculation. But you look at the experience in Europe and Japan, $17 trillion of bonds outstanding with negative yields, and it hasn't worked. You know, Japan's been cycling in and out of downturns. The Eurozone's about to go into recession. So you question the efficacy of negative yields. And, you know, on the surface, it sounds attractive that people would rush out and borrow money and engage it. But, you know, as we all know, the lower that rates go, the less powerful monetary policy is. I personally think that we're a long way from seeing negative yields in the United States, because if anything, we've learned from the European and the Japanese experience that they don't work.
And Bob, I think especially when you combine that with the length at which we, length of time that we've been experimenting with this, if you're
a long time.
I mean, if you come right out of a massive downturn in the economy and you're at low rates, and then you go to that type of a desperation move, you might see that thing, you know, bring some of that stimulus that you're looking for. But we're 10 years into this, you know, kind of an experiment of these low rates. And, you know, let's face it, if you needed to borrow money, I'm guessing you would have borrowed it by now. And, you know, if you're looking at mortgages or whatnot or business spending, it's not, you're not borrowing right now because rates are too high. Let's put it that way.
If you know, yields go negative, I got a deal for you. You can pay me and I'll keep your money. I'll just dig a big old hole in my backyard somewhere, and then you can pay me for that privilege.
Well, isn't that just really the greater fool theory, right? That you're buying that, hoping that somebody
else...
You're
the one that said it.
Hope someone else is going to come along and think it's going even further negative, and that's the guy you're going to sell it to? I mean, that's really what you're left with at that point.
Dave, anecdotally, when the Japanese rates first went negative, they had consumers rushing to hardware stores and home supply stores buying safes for their own home because it was cheaper to buy the safe and keep the cash at their house than it was to put it in the bank and pay them to hold it, or buy that bond and pay them to hold it. So, you know, I think there's some unintended consequences there, but maybe time to buy some stock in Brinks or something like that if you're thinking of holding all that cash.
Joel, let's go to you. You had a host of economic data points that came out this week.
Yeah, Bob. Three of them that I think are very good signs of this whole theme that we have of our economy slowing down, but it's still growing, and they all hinge on consumers. Today we had retail numbers, and they were better than expected, and it was the sixth month in a row that retail sales grew. We know that consumers drive 70% of our economy, so that's good, and so, you know, we're still seeing those consumers spend money. A couple of interesting things from that is that year to year, we've got car dealers, their sales are up 6.8%, which is a lot. And then even more than that, 16% is online stores. And that's just sort of a shift in how we're buying things. But another number was the consumer credit number from the Federal Reserve on Monday. And that showed that consumer credit card use has been going up, and consumer credit use outstanding is going up. It was up at a 11.2% annual rate in July, and that was better than expected. And so that's good, because that means that consumers are confident enough in being able to pay off those bills that they're feeling, you know, free enough to use those credit cards. And then another number that we got today was consumer sentiment, and those numbers tend to be sort of, I mean, consumers are fickle. So this is just sort of a gauging of how consumers are feeling about stuff. But it actually went up from August when it...
Well, it had plunged last month.
Yeah, it had plunged. It was, a 3-year low last month. But there are signs there that people are still, that consumers especially, and, you know, and that they're having confidence. We're not seeing businesses as confident, that consumers are actually feeling better about their ability to spend money and their plans to spend money than businesses are right now.
Okay. Well, it's hard to see clarity with tariffs by tweet, with on again, off again, on again, off again, off again, on again. I can't even call it policy. Not even sure how they arrive at those decisions. But there's no clarity. How do you figure out your supply chains? How do you figure out where you're going to manufacture, where you're going to procure from? Businesses are just being forced to sit on cash. You know, as we talked the other night, business spending is only 14% of the economy. And even though it's fallen off the cliff, it's not enough to put us in recession. And as you know, Joel, every economic forecast these days assumes that the trade wars won't intensify from here. So assuming the trade wars do not intensify, nothing's been accomplished. It's almost impossible for either side to declare victory at this point in time, unless there's some major concessions. And it doesn't appear that either country is inclined to do just that. So, you know, the key is that consumer spending can deteriorate quickly. I marveled at just the last couple of weeks have been reading about layoffs. All right, so it started a couple of weeks ago with Nestle Wisconsin laying off some people. And then I saw the other day that Harley is laying off 50 people. And then I can't remember the other, this other company that they're laying off. And, you know, I honestly, Joel, can't think of the last time that I read articles about layoffs. And now, just within a handful of weeks, you know, we're starting to read here locally that some of the big players are laying people off. So should that trend continue, that'll spill off into consumer confidence and, more importantly, consumer spending pretty quickly.
Right. And the thing about tariffs, too, is that even this survey that the University of Michigan does on consumer sentiment is finding that consumers are concerned about tariffs. That's one of the reasons that the number plunged in August. 38% of those who were interviewed for the current survey brought it up without being prompted. So unprompted, they said that they're concerned about tariffs. And the people who are more concerned about tariffs are more reticent about spending. Mm-hmm. So that could take a toll.
And those tariffs haven't even really materialized yet in retail good purchases. You've seen it in some of the manufacturing area for businesses, but it really hasn't filtered down to the regular consumer yet.
Bob, you mentioned business spending is 14% of the economy, and that's we've seen take a real bad downturn. You look at government spending, which picks up about 16%, and with trillion-dollar deficits, it's hard to see a huge upside in the near term there. So this, I think the fate of this continued expansion falls squarely on the shoulders of the consumer. So I think your concerns about that, seeing that sentiment change rapidly, are really warranted.
You know, good news, bad news, 70% is a huge number. Good news, bad news, we're a closed society, only 12%. Of our GDP is export, and we're unique amongst all of the developed 41 nations in the world with that low percentage of export tied to GDP. So we're fairly well situated to survive the storm. And the key for everyone to understand this is, you know, unless the trade wars intensify, my best guess is we're entering a period of sluggish growth. Which is quite a bit different than a recession. I think all of this recession talk started in mid-August when the two-year Treasury yield went above the 10-year. So that's the classic inversion. We had the three-month go above the 10-year in the springtime. Nobody paid much attention to that. But when the two-year went above the 10-year, I think every publication in the country had articles about the inverted yield curve. The question that I would normally get is, hey, I don't even understand what an inverted yield curve is, but I heard it's bad. Is it bad, Bob? You know, and I was, as you were, you know, talking about it all day long, every day of the week. And now I think it's part of a list of worries and not the worry. So it's like the eye is off of the ball, if you will, and it's not listed as the problem. As it was in mid-August, is just one of a number of issues that are affecting. Because it's important to point out that it's not just trade wars that are bothering the economy, particularly in China. I mean, China is slowing down for all sorts of reasons that have nothing to do with trade. Trade has nothing to do with their weak real estate problems. Trade has very little to do with their phantom banking system and you know, all the loans that are off the books and records of the leading institutions. So, you know, they're grappling with that. And, you know, even if, assuming we will eventually resolve the trade issues, it's not going to solve a lot of China's problems, which doesn't solve Germany's problems. 48% of their economy is export. Just resolving the trade conflicts with China won't resolve the issues that are facing Boris Johnson. How would you like to be Boris these days? You know, he's in for a whole lot of interesting stuff. And now I read this morning the Queen's even mad at him because he misrepresented what he needed her backing on a couple of weeks ago, and I wouldn't want to get her on her bad side. She looks strict even in her happy moments. So, you know, Boris has got some problems here, and I think Brexit could create a significant downturn for the United Kingdom. So, you know, add up all these problems, and it's not just the trade conflicts. But, you know, I got to tell you, even if we go into a downturn, we didn't build up the excesses like we did 10 years ago with junk mortgages and housing. We didn't build up the excesses like we did with tech stocks in the early 2000s. Granted, we don't have the monetary and physical policy responses that we would normally have. But the way I see the tea leaves, even if we do have a mild downturn, it won't be anywhere near as bad as what we saw 10 years ago. I'm knocking on wood here, and you know, perhaps a whole lot milder than what we normally go through. It's important to remind people that, you know, the average recession is only 4 to 6 quarters, so a year to a year and a half. You know, we're normally halfway through recessions before the average person realizes we're even in one. So kind of the proverbial blink of an eye and it's over. So I think it's important to look past. I think it's important to project forward on how long it takes the effects of lower rate cuts to be felt in the system. So we all know that it takes almost a year for the effects of a Fed rate cut to be felt. So fast forward this. They lowered rates at the end of July, right? So we won't even fully feel the effects of that until next summer, right? They're going to lower next week, fine. They're going to lower maybe before Christmas, and they're going to lower in the springtime. Same point. You know, by the time they lower rates next spring, we won't feel the effects of those reductions until the spring of 2021. So the point is, forget this year. It's already baked into the cake. You look at the year after next, and you'll see the economy start to reaccelerate based on those lower rate cuts. It takes a while for them to kick in. So even if we tread sideways, maybe even sell off a little bit, you know, by the year after next, I think things look better. Surely the effects of lower rates will kick in. Surely by then they'll have resolved some of the trade issues. Surely by then we've got to see some kind of increase in productivity rates. So it's just so important to think longer term. And I don't mean 15, 20 years here. You know, I mean literally a couple of years. Just look past a couple of years, and things are going to look a whole lot brighter. Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. We enjoyed doing the show. Thanks for joining us. Go Brewers. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.